You're listening to WWBC, Coco, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Coco, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510, WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere on God's magnificent planet.
Hi, this is Maggie. I'm filling in for Ellen today. I hope I'll do a good job. We'd like to say hi to all our listeners and our guest, Kelly. Welcome to Sita and Friends.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, that's wonderful. So for our listeners who are tuning in today for the first time, I was told by a lot of our friends that we could just ask Alexa to play our show, and she does. If you don't have an Alexa and you want to go on the app, the WWBC app, you can just hit Listen Live, and you can catch our show on there as well. Ellen is taking off today. Ali Tambor is here.
Hello.
She's a friend of our show. Thank you for being here, Allie. Good friend Maggie Hickson is here. Maggie is a flight attendant. She's one of my sisters that I enjoy hanging with, and she's here to fill in and help us out. And Danny's running our board. So for our listeners who are tuning in for the first time, Viewpoint with Sita and Friends gives everybody a platform to speak on our show, whether you want to talk about a nonprofit, maybe you want to talk about a book you have written, your life experiences. People want to share their experiences about financial literacy, the environment, growing older, bolder, wiser, whatever it is. We give you a platform as long as we all understand that freedom of speech comes with a responsibility. And contrary to popular belief, I do believe that if you're being nice and you're kind and you give people respect, it doesn't matter from the janitor to the CFO or CEO of a company. If you speak with people with respect and you put your phone down or make eye contact sometimes, it's a good thing.
Yes.
Wouldn't you say, Maggie?
Yes, absolutely. It is a good thing.
Because, you know, oftentimes in today's world, we're so caught up with social media and we're so caught up with other things that we forget that human beings need connection.
Yeah.
Right, Ali?
Yeah. It's like we're looking for other people who are as angry as we feel, and then they commiserate and then they just foment more anger. Right. Instead of trying to take a breath and work together.
Well, you know, this morning I saw something on Facebook. A friend of mine posted something, and I thought, you know what? That is so true, that the way the world is today, that all of us need to stop sometimes and think about this. And this is what he posted. And I just thought it was the most beautiful quote. He said that nothing destroys you faster than your own mind. Followed by the advice, he says, don't stress over things you cannot control. In other words, don't sweat the small stuff.
There you go.
Because life is too short to sweat the small stuff.
Oh,
and
certainly.
So, and you know, I just feel like sometimes we need to remind ourselves of that as well. Because, you know, so many people, they make enemies with each other over small stuff.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So on our show today, my friend, Kelly Clark is calling in on behalf of a nonprofit that she founded after her beautiful daughter Noelle passed away. It's called Project Noelle. They are in so many states. She'll talk to us in a minute about how many states they're in. And I know my friend Carrie got involved with Project Noelle because she wanted to do something great for the children of the parents who are deceased from drug overdose. So we'll talk to Kelly in a minute. And our second segment, we have a lady by the name of Judith Smith. She has a PhD, and she's a licensed social worker. And she's going to be talking to us later about difficult mothering challenges with adult children through conflict and change. And we all know someone who has returned home after a divorce or maybe a child that still lives at home that's now an adult and has nowhere else to go. So we'll talk to her in the second segment. But for now, we've got Kelly Clark on the phone. And Kelly, thank you for taking the time to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Well, bring us up to speed. What's going on with Project Noel? Because I know you've extended it. You have grown into different states. So talk to our listeners a little bit first about yourself and how Project Noel was founded.
Yes. So Project Noel was founded in 2017 in memory of my daughter, Noel, who passed away of an accidental overdose. She was 11 hours away from entering rehab to try to get some help. Mm. And I don't know, you know, at the time I felt like I needed to be doing something for this horrible drug epidemic. And I didn't know what it was, and I kept praying and praying and praying for an answer. What am I supposed to be doing? And I felt like I wasn't getting an answer. And people would reach out to me and, well, you know, why don't you do this for the sober living homes? Why don't you do that? And it just, that's not what I'm supposed to be doing. And it was going on Christmas time, and it's like God took a board and hit me over the head and said, it's going on Christmas, Noel. I'm looking at her two little boys there. And it was like Project Noel. We're going to help these kids that are being left behind. Because I, you know, going through this, I kept talking to more and more families that were going through the same thing I was going through. And yeah, like I said, God finally had to slap me in the head with a board. But so we founded Project Noel right then in my little county. And it was going to be something I did for Christmas. We were going to help these families for Christmas. And it just blew up on me. And people kept saying, well, are you going to keep this going beyond Christmas? And I finally said, well, I guess so. I guess just because Christmas is over, it doesn't mean that these kids and these families couldn't use some help.
Right. And you know, there are thousands of children who have suffered because the opioid epidemic. And talk to us a little bit about Noel and the children, because like you say, when Christmas is over, the children still have to live. There's 365 days in a year. And they need mental help, and they need help with their homework. And we're all watching so many grandparents who are now raising their grandchildren because of the opioid epidemic.
Exactly. I mean, we do have support groups up in our counties, some of our counties. We're trying to get them spread to all of our counties. You know, Project Noel's 100% volunteer based. So as we get more volunteers, we're able to do more in each county. But these kids definitely, you know, the Noel's boys, I mean, they're doing well. Don't get me wrong. They're doing well. They're involved in everything. They're doing good in school. But, you know, I mean, we've had different issues that it's like, how do you answer that? You know, my one grandson said to me one time he couldn't wait to go to heaven. And I was like, what? And he said, well, we learned that it's really beautiful in heaven and mommy's there.
Yeah, and their father also passed away as well as your son.
Yes, my son passed away of an overdose September 1st of 2021. And then Noel's boy's dad died on Christmas Eve of 2021. We've been hit pretty hard. It's not an easy thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I feel like, you know, there's so much, as a parent, you go through so much guilt. You know, the woulda, coulda, shouldas. Why didn't I say this? Why didn't I do that? You know, and with Project Noel, I've realized that a lot of our kids go through the same thing. And it's heartbreaking. You know, if I wouldn't have talked back, if I would have gotten better grades in school, if I wouldn't have gotten in trouble for doing this, maybe my mom wouldn't have gone out that night and used drugs. And, you know, so it's just, yeah, that was something I really wasn't expecting, I guess, when I first started this. But we try to make sure that the kids know it's not their fault.
You know, right. And also parents like yourself, that you take, you know, because I could see how that would, you know, eat up your insides. Because you blame yourself and woulda, shoulda, coulda, what could I have done for my daughter? Because one of the major cause of death in the United States, drug overdoses are one of the leading injury-related cause of death right here in the United States. It's not just It's not just Noel.
Lifespan has come down, and they attribute that to the drug epidemic. So yeah, it's bad. But you know, I mean, they say, you know, childhood trauma, you know, is terrible. It's something that you know, some drug addicts, you know, say they started using drugs because of childhood trauma they experienced. And I can't tell you how many of our kids even are the ones that found their parent. And it's like, that to me is childhood trauma.
Yes. And you know, we're grateful that we live in a country where if you're fortunate enough to have health insurance, you can get some mental health therapy. If you have money, you could get therapy. But then you think about the people that don't have access to health care or insurance. And your heart breaks for those people, because those are the ones like what you're talking about. And, you know, we're living in a world now where we see so much violence all over the world through wars or whatever. And a lot of those kids are going to grow up without having therapy as well. So you're right. Sometimes trauma, it does affect people, and whatever substance they can get to cope, they would do it.
Exactly. So, yeah, that's our thing, is let's deal with this now. You know, let's talk about this now and not wait till they go into adulthood and, you know,
and you have
find other ways to cope.
And Kelly, Kelly, you have what states are Project Noel in now?
So we are in Ohio, which is where we started. We're in Florida, and now we've moved into North Carolina.
Oh, that's wonderful. And now, so tell our listeners here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, how is Project Noel funded in order to help the children?
So we are completely funded right now with donations, and we do get some community grants. Nothing federal or anything, but a lot of the communities will have grant programs that do help out. So that's how we function. And, you know, I've had volunteers of mine say before, you know, are we going to put a limit this year on kids? Because we're getting an awful lot of kids signed up for Christmas. And it's like, no, we're not going to put a limit on. I work on faith. And even though I founded Project Noel, I feel like I'm really not the one in charge here.
Yeah.
And, you know, working on faith has done wonders for us.
Yeah.
You know, things have come through that we didn't expect, and it's just been amazing.
Yeah. Well, I know that I partaked a few times in the gift giving for Christmas. And I have to say, Kelly, I saw the faces of the children when the moms drove up to the Chase Bank right here in Cocoa, Florida, that, you know, those employees at Chase, we got to hand it to them. It was awesome. My friend Carrie spearheaded that. And the moms were driving up, and they had, you know, bicycles and computers and shoes and clothes. And what I love about Project Noel is the people that are donating these items to the children, they do it from a place of love. They do it because they understand that these children have no one for the holidays. And I exactly. saw the faces of those moms, and I have got to commend you for what you are doing and expanding into so many states, because those moms, when they drove away, they know when they get back home, they've got something for those. Well, it's not just moms, it's grandparents.
Yeah.
A lot of them were grandparents and great grandparents too.
Yes. Aunts, uncles, friends, you name it. You know, it's people are taking in these kids. Our foster care system is overwhelmed. And, you know, you got to hand it to all these people that are, you know, especially our grandparents and great grandparents that are living on a fixed income.
Yes.
You know, and they're taking in small kids and starting all over.
Well, you know, in 2023, approximately 105,000 people died in the United States from drug overdoses, which equates right. to about 287 deaths per day. So you think about how many children have lost a loved one, and it breaks
exactly.
your heart. So I'm yeah. sure you've reached out to some businesses as well. Does Project Noel partner up with any businesses to help? Because it's not just at Christmas time you're helping. You're helping with Easter baskets. You're helping with back-to-school haircuts. You're helping with family events, support groups, yeah. Emergency clothing and diapers. You guys are doing a lot, not just around the holidays.
Yes, we are busy nonstop all year long. And now we have even added on a couple programs because we weren't busy enough. So my son, Michael, that passed away was real into sports. He was offered a scholarship to college, everything, and instead decided to try heroin with his friends. But we've added on now Michael's place at Project Noel. That program is strictly to help with sports things. If a kid needs a mitt, if a kid needs cleats, everything's pay to play now. And, you know, Noel's kids have always been very involved in sports, but I've had so many people say to me, oh, you know, Billy would love to play. We just can't afford it. And, I mean, you want all kids to be part of a team, but I think it's especially important for these kids that have been grieving and confused. You know, they need to feel like they belong, like they're a part of the team.
Right. And so I noticed one of the things that you all are doing at Project Noel as well, knowing very well that poly substances, the uses are very common right now. I mean, overdose deaths involve multiple drugs. And I noticed that you all are also having people come in and do education and public speaking with the kids, the adults, yeah. anyone who would listen as well.
Yeah. You know, and what we've done now is we have partnered up with the National Guard. So they have a counter drug program. And we actually, a few years ago, they started just to help it out. In Ohio at like Christmas, Easter, any of our summer events, they'd come out and help. Then we really kind of officially partnered with them in Ohio because they supply us with a full-time person. So they pay his payroll. He works 36 hours a week doing nothing but Project Noel. Thankfully, this past spring, we were able to team up with the Florida National Guard. So they've been coming out to our events. They'll be at our distributions to help pass gifts out. Their big thing is prevention, youth and prevention. So that was our other program I was going to say that we're offering now is we're doing events geared towards kids and prevention. And, you know, everybody that's in the National Guard Counter Drug Program, they are specialized prevention, whether they're youth prevention specialists is what they're called.
Right. And so, and you do have amazing businesses as well, in addition to the National Guard?
We do. In your area, I know that, the church in Titusville, the Grove Church, they help a ton. There's Lloyd's in Titusville. I know Zachary's Restaurant in Cape Canaveral's helped.
And, of course, Chase Bank with my friend Carrie.
Yeah.
They're all
and
helping.
Chase Bank's done a huge.
Yeah, they're wonderful. So for our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with my friend Kelly Clark. She is the founder and director of Project Noel, where they help thousands of kids in three states here, Ohio, Central Florida, North Carolina, whose parents died of drug overdose. And, you know, Maggie, I don't know if you know this, and Allie, but there's so many facts about drug overdose, right? And one of them is that drug abuse can turn into an addiction, right? The other one is drug abuse can worsen mental health conditions. Drug abuse can impair judgment and lead to very risky behavior. Drug abuse can lead to poor performance at work and at school. And also, drug abuse can lead to social isolation. And how many of us go through a day sometimes not knowing that these things can happen? Now, Kelly, did you notice any of these things with your children before they passed away from planet Earth?
I mean, Michael started using drugs before Noelle did. And, you know, there were signs that I was seeing that I think I kind of put blinders on for a while. I knew what was going on, but I didn't want to see it. I didn't want to believe that out of my child. And he ended up with a 14-year-long terrible addiction. Noelle had only been using drugs for a short time. She actually suffered from postpartum depression after she had her twins. And, yeah, she was looking for something to help her get through it. And she knew better. She worked for the Cleveland Clinic. You know, college educated. She was very independent. Never wanted to depend on anybody. And this postpartum depression kicked in. And, of course, she had to have a C-section with her twins. She's going through postpartum. They were giving her Vicodin for pain. And one thing led to another.
Yeah, and that's common. That's quite common, you know, here in the United States, that people get hooked on prescription drugs. And then when they can no longer get that, then they go into something else. But, you know, I just want to commend you. The website is excellent. The team of dedicated volunteers that you have, it's just beautiful to hear the testimonials from the people and see the National Guard and all the people that are helping. So tell us a little bit about events that are happening that we can share with our listeners here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends so people can get involved right here in Florida.
Well, we always need volunteers. Always, always, always. We never have enough. Like I said before, you know, the more volunteers we have, the more we're able to do for the kids in the community. Right now, we're smack dab in the middle of Christmas, and I know Brevard County is our biggest county in Florida right now, and we're going into more counties the first of the year down there. But right now, they're smack dab into that. Our new calendar for the year will come out around the first of the year, and that's on our website. It'll be on our Facebook page. But, you know, any events we have for the kids, like we do a picnic for our families, a lot of times we'll do something for Easter, all that will be published the first of the year.
Yeah, and I like that it's faith-based as well. What would we do without faith, right? And you have a lot of people that are helping because they do believe that we ought to be our brothers and sisters' keepers, not just in words, but in actions as well.
Yes, exactly. I honestly don't believe I would not, I would still be here breathing if it wasn't for God.
Yeah.
I don't know how, I can't explain how I've survived it. I think the loss of a child is something that totally different.
Yeah, I don't think you ever get over it, but I like that you have taken the memory of Noel and Michael and you are doing something about it to help other people because they're living through your work. It's like a ministry. They're living through what you do for the children. So we have a few minutes left. If you could give us your website and tell our listeners how they can get involved.
So our website is www.projectnoelle.com. If you go to our website, there's a tab you can click if you want to get involved and help out. That comes straight to us. It gets sent to the county director from where they live, and they reach out. And that's, you know, when I say we have volunteers that get involved in a little bit of everything. We have some that only bake cookies. We have some that like to do thank you cards. So it's, you know, we'll have people say, well, we don't have a lot of time. Hey, you know what? A half hour a month.
Yes.
Nothing is too small.
And the website is www.projectnoelle.com.
That's it.
Now, really quick, tell my friend Maggie and Allie a little bit about the wish list. Because I saw some of the wish lists, and it breaks your heart, you know. Do you have any wish list that stands out in your mind?
Yeah, I've had a few. Every year we get some in that it'll say anything is appreciative, not picky. We've had teenagers, well, I'm probably talking more in Ohio, but teenagers that ask for a coat and a pair of gloves. It's just, you know, some of the things I think that most, you know, I'd say most teenagers take for granted. You know, and then you get some of these teenagers that the one thing they want the most is a coat and a pair of gloves.
Yes.
And it's, you know.
Or shoes. Some of them ask for shoes. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
So it's about the generous spirit and the act of giving, because sometimes when you give, you have to give it without expecting anything in return. But I think at some point, all the children that are born on the planet, I mean, all the children, no matter where they come from, especially when they've experienced the loss of a father and a mother, or maybe one parent, we ought to take care of these kids.
Oh, absolutely.
And Maggie's going to jump in here. She just said yes because she did not know about Project Noel, and I think she's amazed how much she's learning about it.
I am, Kelly, and thank you so much for what you're doing. I volunteer with the Guardian Ad Litem program here in Brevard County for our circuit with the courts and advocate for children and families in the foster care system. And I've been doing this since 2020. And I wouldn't say officially, but from my observation, that substance abuse is one of the number one reasons that children are separated from their parents.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I hear that all over.
Right. And, you know, I think it's good that we have a nonprofit like Project Noel that does go out and educate the public, because everything in our world comes down to education. When you know about Narcan, when you know about, you know, when you know about drug abuse, when you know to try different things in life to help your children. I mean, people don't understand this, but culturally, we are tribal people. We need each other. And
exactly. And
why shouldn't we? You would find the people who have a great support system. It helps a lot. And Kelly, you have become the support system for so many people. So thank you so much for taking the time to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And again,
thank you again.
And before you leave, go ahead. I'm going to give you the last minute. Go ahead.
Okay. What I always say is more than material things or anything, what we want these kids especially to know, but and the families, is that we're here and we care. you know, you're not out there trying to do all this alone. We've have a lot of volunteers that have talked to different grandmothers and stuff that have, you know, or mothers that have lost children, just for somebody to talk to.
Yeah. Right.
And that's the thing. We're here for you. We care about you. We care about what you've gone through.
That's a T-shirt right there. We here, we care. Yeah.
Yep.
I hope you can branch out
in
and
a
make
no judgment zone.
Make merchandise too, you know,
yeah,
for people.
There we go.
Yeah, next thing you know, you guys are going to branch off into merchandise, because it is very important that people listen, because when you listen, it shows that you care. So thank you again.
Right.
And
no, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome, love. I do believe in what you're doing. And when I saw some of the wish list that I received years ago from kids, it just broke my heart that these are things that people were waiting on year round, and their families just didn't have a few extra bucks to buy stuff for them for Christmas. So I appreciate
right.
what you're doing. So again, give us your website one more time, Kelly Clark, and we'll take a break and go to our second guest.
Okay. It's www.projectnoelle. And again, it's NOELLE.com.
All right, Danny, take it away. We'll be right back with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends with our second segment.
Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at Cloud9, that's Cloud number 9, furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral, and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345. Located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne, that's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere on God's magnificent planet.
Welcome. If you have Alexa, ask her to play Sita and Friends or listen
live.
Yeah.
On the app. That's where right.
This is the most fun, listening live and being together here in the studio, don't you think, Allie?
Yeah, it's kind of like having coffee without really having a coffee cup, right? Because Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is very fun. It's very unscripted. We give out valuable information, and it's interesting. People want to know what's going on. And, you know, community radio is something that is kind of going out the window with all the podcasting and things.
Yeah.
But not everybody wants to sit and watch somebody for an hour. It gets to be boring after a while. So for our listeners who are tuning into Viewpoint with Sita and Friends for the first time, we have this radio show here. We've been on air for 15 years. We were very fortunate to get a proclamation from the city of Cocoa thanking us for our work that we do here, because we give people a platform to talk about whatever they want to talk about, as long as they understand freedom of speech comes with a responsibility. We speak to people who are writing a book, who wants to write a book, who have life experiences to share about clean air, water, sunshine. Maybe people want to talk about health insurance, running for office, why they ran for office, corruption in office. They want to talk about Brevard County, national, the world. They want to talk about the war, what we should do not to have wars. Maybe they want to prevent some, whatever it is. Some people want to call in and talk about taxes, whatever they want to talk about. We give them a platform. Right, Allie?
Yeah. We even had the Sheriff Wayne Ivey on here.
We love him.
Yes.
You know, he's a friend of the show. I mean, some people, it's controversial, some
but
of the things that I
have. He's a nice guy to us. You know, I can't speak on anything else. I don't know him anything else.
Well, you know, in life, if somebody's nice to you, you're nice to them. And Maggie, you and I have always spoken about kindness and respect.
Yes.
Right? And why it's important.
It is. And so is keeping your mind sharp and educating yourself and knowing about things that are happening that you may not have been aware of. So what I like is that you can share episodes with your friends and your family if they may have missed it, right, straight from the website.
That's right. Right. And so our first segment was with Project Noel. Our friend Kelly Clark called in to speak about a grandparents raising grandchildren after their children have passed away from opioid overdose or drug overdose, and she talked a little bit about their thing. And now we've got Dr. Judith R. Smith. She's the author of Mothering Challenging Adult Children Through Conflict and Change. I hope she writes one about mothering husbands and mothering friends and mothering co-workers. So Dr. Smith, take it away. Tell us a little bit more about yourself and why you decided to write this book. Of course, I mean, your education speaks for itself. You have a PhD and you're a licensed social worker, and you've dealt with people all your life. So it would make sense that you write a book about this. So talk to us.
Well, thank you for having me. I was a clinical social worker and a professor for many years, and I had one son. And I had always studied mothers and young children. There's so many books. If you ever go to a bookstore, go to the parenting section, there's like 50 books about mothering infants, or a few on toddlers, and a few more on adolescents. But there's hardly any books about mothering adult children. And as my son got older, I was curious what my colleagues were writing about the relationship that parents have with their adult children. Obviously, we don't stop mothering when our kids, you know, pass the border of 18 or 21. But what are the issues? What are the conflicts that come up? And I discovered that very little has been written. And I decided that was going to be my calling. And I just went out and went to senior centers and would ask the parents, people there, who was a parent, and what were the problems they were facing when their kids were young, and what problems did they have when their kids were older?
And well, that brings to mind, once a mother, always a mother.
Yeah.
Right, right. But the question is, how is it different? And what can research tell us about the experiences of being older and one's kids. And I particularly, the people who wanted to talk to me and who had problems had adult children with serious mental illness or substance use disorder. And these are the problems that were particularly hard for a mother to respond to, because they're problems that a mother can't solve. It's different than when your kid, you know, falls down and hurts their knee and you can put a bandage on it and help it. When someone has serious mental illness, you can't put the bandage on and help. You have to rely on our mental health system, and you have to rely on the person's ability to want to stay in treatment or take medication. And that's often not the case.
Right. And, you know, and of lately, we've had so much talk in our nation about, you know, universal health care or mental health therapy or mental health help. And you're absolutely correct. I think if parents got a little more help with that, when they recognize that they have a child that needs it, it would help into adulthood. And we're all watching that, because these children who have challenges, they grow up to be parents who give birth to children, and they still have challenges.
Mm-hmm, definitely. But serious mental illness, I mean, mental health is different than serious mental illness. Serious mental illness is when the person who has a serious mental illness experiences delusions and hallucinations. And also, for many people who have serious mental illness, there's something called anosognosia, which means that the person who has a serious mental illness often doesn't recognize that they actually are ill. So it makes no sense for them, even if they've been in the hospital and they were put on medication, to continue to take the medication, because they don't understand that they have a real problem.
So yeah, when you wrote the book, I'm sure you had stories in the book that exemplifies or give examples of a difficult adult child and a time when a mother or a father would have a difficult time mothering this person as well. So can you tell us like an example of something like that?
Sure. I can give you two different examples. One is Rebecca, who was 65 when I met her. She was already on disability because she had been hurt in a work accident. And her son, Brandon, was living with her. He was 32 years old. What was difficult for her is he was verbally abusive to her, and he also could get physically abusive towards her. And he had serious mental illness and a substance use problem. So she was living in her house with somebody who could become very aggressive. And at times she said she feared for her life. She told me she was afraid she was going to die in her house by her son's hands. And I was shocked, and I tried to ask her, why didn't she get help? And she said this: she had reached out for help, but she was not going to do what was being suggested, which was to evict her son, because she could not live with the possible consequences of his being on the streets. And that's one of the real difficult adult children is really about difficult mothering and the horrible decisions that one has to make. If with Rebecca's situation, here was her son putting her own life at risk. But she was, what she said is, I love him too much to evict him.
Wow.
And she was afraid.
And we hear that all the time. I think Maggie has a question for you as well.
Okay, go ahead.
Good afternoon, Doctor. How did you approach the research for Difficult, the title of your book, and what were some of the challenges you encountered?
I did a qualitative study, which meant that when I got people who wanted to be interviewed, they signed a consent form, and then I would meet with them twice for about an hour and a half in each session. And then I would record the sessions and then listen to the transcripts and analyze them and compare what were the commonalities across all the people that I interviewed. And I was interviewing initially primarily poor women, Black, Hispanic, and white. And then I expanded the sample to include middle class and affluent women. And what I was looking for is what were the commonalities across all the stories. And like in Rebecca's story, where she was afraid to live with her son and at the same time afraid to have him leave, was a commonality across so many of the women who I met.
Well, yeah, because that creates such anxiety for the parent. And I saw that as a child growing up in Trinidad and Tobago. We would often hear stories of people who kept their adult children at home. And, you know, there was a lot of judgment. People would say, well, that kid something is wrong. They wouldn't say they were mentally challenged or whatever. They would say, oh, that's a mad person. That's an angry person. And the mom has to barricade herself sometime in the home. The person was seen throwing bricks, talking to himself. But, you know, mm-hmm. back in the day, a lot of these people didn't have medication, didn't have a way of getting help. And so they kept, and you would hear screams sometime in the mm-hmm. night. And you knew that something was happening in that home, whether between the mother and the child or the parents fighting over the person, the adult child. And so, yeah, I remember stories like that. And there were no places for them to go.
Well, the story continues, you know, here in United States with all the wealth that we have. There's still, what happened was we used to have large psychiatric hospitals that were called asylums. In the 1960s, it was realized that those were terrible places for anybody to be. And we closed all the large psychiatric hospitals because they were really inhumane. And the promise was that there were going to be community mental health, that we would have smaller hospitals. We would have, in every community, there would be social workers and psychiatrists to help people and find them jobs. But that never happened. The funding never happened for all the community mental health that we need. So right now, if you have a child with a serious mental illness, you are left very much on your own. And if you bring your son or daughter to the emergency room, if they've been psychotic, if they've threatened you, they will be admitted, but only for 72 hours. And many people are discharged after 72 hours. So parents are left in a terrible situation where we don't have sufficient community resources to help them or help their daughter or son. So when I use the word difficult, what I'm talking about is the really difficult situation that parents, mothers and fathers, are facing when they have a child, and a child can be 50 years old. I'm interviewed people who are 80 years old who are trying to help their 50-year-olds.
You're so right. I'm a long-term care nurse, and I remember once we had a patient who was on hospice, and this patient was in the active death and dying process. And that woman, it just etched in my memory. She was about 92 to 93 years old. And the last thing she said to me, who is going to take care of my disabled, mentally challenged son at home?
Right.
Because
no, exactly.
That child lived with her, and I think he was in his 70s. Mm-hmm. And she was worried that his older siblings were not speaking to him because of his behavior. And she held my hand and she said, honey, they are going to be selling the house when I die. Where will my son go? And
right.
that's very sad that a mother has to think about it at that age.
Right. And in the book, which is available on Amazon, it's called Difficult: Mothering Challenging Adult Children Through Conflict and Change. There's a whole chapter that's called After I'm Gone. And that is a very strong theme that many of these parents experience. And it's really important to know that you are not alone in trying to figure out this challenge. And there are many parents who become advocates trying to change our mental health system that will be more responsive to providing housing for people who have serious mental illness and providing better services.
Well, Allie's got a question for you as well. She can't wait to jump in because Allie is wiser and older than all of us here in the studio.
Thank you very much.
and she's seen a lot of what I say stuff, which is life experiences.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've had several lives. So, hi, Doc. I was just, with everything that you've been saying, it led me to ask, according to all of the stuff that you've pulled together, how important is it to say you have community and social support for mothers in situations like this?
It's extremely important because so many of the services are based on the person who has the mental illness or the person who has the substance use problem. What we also need is services to the parents themselves, to because every parent who's dealing with this, they're dealing with it individually.
Yeah.
And they also blame themselves. They think, what did I do wrong that my son is so aggressive to me? You know, I must have been a bad mother if I have a mentally ill child. There's a lot of misinformation that assumes that mental illness is caused by bad parenting. And mothers are often experience shame and blame by others if their adult children are troubled and unable to work because of substance use or mental illness.
Yeah.
And if you can join a group with other mothers, you begin to see that you are not alone, that this is a very difficult situation. Our mental health system and substance use treatment services have to be improved, and you need better access. But you yourself are experiencing so much guilt and self-blame that you have to reach out to other people. There's the National Association of Mental Illness, which is a great group. There's Al-Anon for parents who have adult children who have substance use problem. And I myself offer groups for parents. So it's really, you have to stop blaming yourself, and you have to really start connecting with other mothers and fathers who are in the same boat and begin to find solutions, whether it's by becoming an advocate or by, you know, there's elder abuse services that if you are feeling frightened in your own home, you can reach out and talk to social workers who will help give you some advice about how to keep yourself safe in your own home. And there's a lot of shame about calling the police if your adult child is attacking you, because you're afraid that the police and other people will blame you and think you're a bad mother if your own child is attacking you.
Yeah, not just but if your kid end up in jail or in prison, it's
right,
a different
right.
story then. And there's such a stigma attached to mental health. The thing is, I think what people don't understand, you know, certain cultures approach life differently. You know, here in the United States, we have politicians or people that tell a woman what to do with her body, you know, to have a child or not have a child. But once that child is born, a lot of them pull back the services. When the child is born, it needs housing, it needs food, a place to live, health insurance, mental health insurance, dental insurance, you know, the parents need that too. But, you know, we notice in other cultures, like you would have a network of extended family, like, say, people from the Far East or India or other countries, where there's such a support system that people can talk about what's happening within the family. Because, you know, Dr., mothering doesn't stop when a child is in their 20s. According to the research and for your book, you're saying that a lot of these adult children that you spoke about are from the ages of 28 to 58. So this is mm-hmm. when you need that support system, because a person has to live and a person has to have a place that's safe and people that care and want to offer love and support.
But I think extended family can be wonderful, but many of the mothers who I spoke to had stopped telling their families about the difficulties they had every day because people got tired of it and they couldn't understand why the parents couldn't solve this. And often even family members will say, kick him out, kick him out. And that's not what the mother felt able to do. Rebecca didn't feel able to kick her son out, even though he was so verbally and physically aggressive with her. She needed help to figure out how to make this very difficult decision. And family are wonderful, but often we have to start looking for what we call weaker ties, like an organization like Al-Anon or NAMI, where you can more formal groups where you can meet with people who have the same problem. Because sometimes our families, as much as they love us, can't understand the terrible anguish that you are going through as you're trying to decide, how do you balance, I can't live with him anymore, with I'm terrified of kicking him out.
You know, I've always wondered about that, because you would have family members where one sibling is flying like a kite and his children are doctors and lawyers and PhDs and whatever. And that same person has a brother or a sister who is in need. And they know that this person is in need. And of course, you know, this show could go on forever. They would have different political affiliations or whatever. But when you see your sibling suffering with a child who has mental illness, wouldn't you think, doctor, that families will come together and, like you say, join a group that advocate for mental health? You know, vote for people in office that would help with healthcare. You often wonder what has happened to the human being, that people just, they do look the other way sometimes, and they don't want to hear about other people's problems. They don't want to get involved, and they'll tell you vocally, take him to the hospital, kick him out. You know, like, what has happened to humanity?
But I think there are also many people who do care. There are many mothers and fathers who've become successful advocates. I mean, you talked about prison. Our prisons have become the mental health system in America. And there's many families who are getting involved in trying to change the laws, trying to make it possible that people have mandated medication when they become psychotic. And there are things one can do, you know, that don't become despairing, and that mental illness is something that's very hard for people to understand. And it's, you know, it doesn't mean that your family members are bad people because they don't give you the right advice, but look elsewhere where you can really connect with organizations that really understand mental illness or really understand substance abuse, and get your knowledge there and find people who can help you find a new path for yourself and for your kids.
So give us the website where we can buy your book, and tell our listeners here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends where we can find your book, Mothering Challenging Adult Children Through Conflict and Change.
Well, you can go to my website, which is difficultmothering.com. It's pretty easy, difficultmothering.com. You can also go to Amazon and just put in Judith Smith, and if you put in difficult mothering, it will come up. But my website is difficultmothering.com. And I hope this is touching a chord. I know many people, I've gotten many letters from people who read my book, and they are tell me this is the first time that they've seen their own story in print, and it made them feel less lonely. And this is really important. You can't be blaming yourself. You need to connect with other people who also have kids with serious mental illness, or have kids who are abusing drugs, and they go to rehab, and then they start, they get well, and then they start using them again.
Doctor, at the end of the day, every human being wants to be loved and appreciated, no matter where they come from. And on that note, I want to thank you, Dr. Judith Smith, for calling in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We want to thank Kelly Clark for calling in and speaking about Project Noel. And for my listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, on our sponsors, on our guests, we thank you. And we will be back here next Monday.
Yes, next Monday. You know, I am always amazed at how every show goes by so fast. And I leave here with knowledge that I can share with people in my community and improve their lives.
We'll be back next week. Thank you, Miss Maggie, and thank you, Dr. Smith, and we will share all your information on our website.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
All right.